Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Daled Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is asking a question as to the authorship of our Mishnah. Gemara says, Man hai tano de itle. Which Tana has all of these items? Number one, Iser Kolel. Number two, Iser Mosif. And number three, Iser Bebat Achat. Which Tana believes that all three of these items are an exception to the rule of Ein Iser Chalal Iser? Now the truth is that the Gemara should have already answered based on what we did in yesterday's daf. And the answer could be Rabbi Yossi. And the Tosfot Yeshanim already says that. Hachanami avimotzi lemeimer Rabbi Yossi hi. The Gemara could have said it's Rabbi Yossi. Deitle Iser Kolel. According to Rabbi Chiya, he holds of Iser Kolel. And even in the last answer of the Gemara, even Bar Kapara would agree with that. Bekoshkein deitle Iser Mosif. If he has Iser Kolel, then for sure he has Iser Mosif. Beiser Babat Achat. That's what we discussed yesterday about the hierarchy of these items that allow you to override Ein Iser Chalal Iser. As far as hierarchy is concerned, Bat Achat is the most likely to override, then Iser Mosif, and then Iser Kolel. Since Iser Kolel is the least likely to override, if Rabbi Yossi believes that Iser Kolel allows there to be Iser Chalal Iser, then he certainly believes that Iser Mosif and Iser Bat Achat are able to overcome the problem of Ein Iser Chalal Iser. So Rabbi Yossi could be the author of the Mishnah. But nevertheless, Elanokad Rabbi Meir Mishum Di'itle Behedja Kohani Yachad. We're going to pick Rabbi Meir, who's going to be the answer of the Gemara here, because Rabbi Meir says it explicitly, meaning he has numerous Isurim in the same type of format, which clearly indicates that he has all of these items. So even though we do know it's true by Rabbi Yossi, they wanted to mention it about Rabbi Meir, because we have that explicit by him. Kohani Yachad Kolel Mosifu Bat Achat. They're all mentioned together in a single unit with regards to Rabbi Meir. It also might be because, in general, Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir-hi, so the Gemara is much more comfortable making Rabbi Meir the author of our Mishnah. And also, we found that there were opinions within Rabbi Yossi that didn't believe that he held the Iser Kolel. So for all of those reasons, the Gemara is looking for a different author of the Mishnah. And now the attribution that they give it to is Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav Rabbi Meir-hi. Our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Now, why is the Gemara certain that within our Mishnah we have all of these items? And that Rashi explains to us because the progression in the Mishnah has it that these Isurim came in stages. And because of those stages, it involves all these different methodologies for overcoming the problem of Ein Iser Chalal Iser. And that is, we have Reuven and Shimon, who are brothers, getting married to Rachel and Leah, who are sisters. Reuven first marries Leah. So at that time, Bebat Achat, in one moment, she becomes both an Eshet Ish and an Eshet Ach. Vis-a-vis Shimon, now she's a married woman. And at the same moment that she became a married woman, she also becomes Eshet Ach, his brother's wife. Then later on, Shimon goes ahead and marries Rachel. Once he's done that, he now makes Leah not only into an Eshet Ish and Eshet Ach, but also into Achot Isha. Now that only works because of Iser Kolel. Over here, making her into Achot Isha is not an Iser Mosif, because being an Eshet Ish and Eshet Ach already covers all the possible people that could be Asur over here. So Achot Isha is not adding anything in the dimension of Iser Mosif to the woman. What it does do is that this individual, Shimon, once he has married Rachel, then at that point, he's also made it that he's Asur to all of her sisters. So that is an Iser Kolel, because he expanded the Isur through this problem. The problem of Achot Isha not only generates something vis-a-vis the wife of his brother or a married woman, but also has a broader impact to Shimon himself, which is now he's Asur and all of their sisters. So that's called an Iser Kolel. And we say, Migo, the Asre Lahanach Kiddushin Bekulu Sharach Vata, because this marriage that Shimon has now makes him Asur and all the other sisters, therefore, because of Achot Isha, therefore Asre Leinami Be'eshet Achiv, even though this woman is already Asur because of Eshet Achiv and Eshet Ish, nevertheless, it adds on that additional Isur. So that's the Iser Kolel. Then after that, we have the Pirsa Nida. The woman or the women become Nidot. And in becoming Nidot, that's an Iser Mosif. Because over here, the women themselves, Rachel and Leah, who before this point were Mutarot to their Balim, to their husbands, now with Nida, they become Asurot. So actually, the women themselves now add on a dimension of Iser that wasn't there before. That's called Iser Mosif, through them becoming a Nida, and their husbands becoming a Surim. So therefore, Migo, Ditosef, the Iser, the Gabe Balam, just like the Iser is added on towards their husbands, so too that Iser will be added on to parties that are not their husbands. And that's how we get to the four Yisurim in our Mishnah. The first two through Bat Achat, the Achot Isha through Yisur Golel, and the Yisur Nida through Yisur Mosif. And that's why the Gemara is searching for an author who has all three of these items that overcome the problem in Yisur Chal Al Yisur. So Amar Yehuda Amar Rav says it's Rabbi Meir here. Ditanya, we have a Braita. Yesh Ochel Achila Achat, V'chayav Aleha Arba Achatot. A person can eat one item, and in the eating of that one item, can obligate himself in four chatot, v'asham echad, and one asham. Tamei, the individual is tamei, she'achal chelev, v'hu notar min ha-mukdashim b'yom ha-kippurim. Now, all of these items involve an Isur Karet, because the only way that you bring a chatat is if b'mezid there's an Isur Karet, then b'shogeg you bring a chatat. So all four of these items have an Isur Karet associated with them, that is, a tamei that eats kodashim betumat aguf is chayav karet. Number one. Number two is chaleb, the eating of the fats of the usur fats of the animal. That is an isur karet. Notar mina mukdashim, leftovers of kodesh past the time period where you're allowed to eat them. Notar has a chiyuv karet associated with it. Eating on Yom Kippur also has a chiyuv karet associated with it. So over here, this person violated all of these in one shot. The person was Tamei, and they were eating Chelev. That was left over from the Kodashim on Yom HaKippurim. And then Rabbi Meir adds on top of that, Im Haita Shabbat, if it was also Shabbat, Ve'utzio Bifiv, and he carried it out while he was eating it, Chayav. Then he's Chayav an additional Korban Chatat. Now as far as the Korban Hasham is concerned, the Hasham becomes because there's an Isur Me'ilah here, which is, that is the misappropriation of Hekdesh. So the Isur Me'ilah results in an Hasham Me'ilot, but that's a separate issue. As far as the Isurim of the Chataot, Rabbi Meir is trying to add on an additional Chatat that is associated with Shabbat. Now Rashi explains over here that Rabbi Meir must hold that Ein Eruv Hotzali Yom HaKippurim, that there's no problem of carrying on Yom Kippur, otherwise he could have created the same scenario with regards to Yom HaKippurim. He wouldn't need Shabbat for that issue. And therefore, he uses Shabbat for the carrying because he doesn't believe Yom Kippur has that problem of carrying. That's the way Rashi explains it. There are others who think that the problem that Rabbi Meir is adding here is that there's the Yom HaKippurim is carrying on Yom HaKippurim. And then the addition of Shabbat is that he adds Shabbat, so there's an Easter of carrying Yom HaKippurim and on Shabbat. And we'll explain why some of the Rishonim have this perspective with regards to the addition of Shabbat here on top of Yom HaKippurim. Now, let's understand how this happens. And that's what Rashi explains to us. How do you get to these four chataot over here? Number one is, once the behemah is born, once the behemah is created, then there is an isur of chelev. This animal is chulin, but there's an isur of chelev when the animal is born, and that starts from day one. But at that point in time, it's still mutar behana'ah. Chelev is asur b'achila, but it's mutar to get benefit from it. Huk the shah. At that point, once you're magdish the animal, Migo di tosif isur hana ala chelev, that's an isur mosif. Because now you added on an additional dimension of isur to the chefetz, to the chelev itself. Before it was only restricted in achila, now you've added on a dimension that it's also asur behana'a. So once you're makdish it, the chelev itself now takes on another isur, the isur of hana'a. Because migo, that the kodashim add on the isur hana'a to everything else, then it also adds on an isur achila of a zar eating kodashim. So that Isur Vazarika eating Kodashim is now added at that point in time. Then it became notar. The Korban was brought, everything was done with it, and now it becomes notar, it was left over. So now Migo di Tosif Isur the Mizbeach, because when something becomes notar, then we add on an additional dimension of Isur, not just Isur Achila and Isur Ana, but also an Isur to go on the Mizbeach. So the Chefetz actually takes on another dimension of Isur. And this is another Isur Mosif, because vis-a-vis the Mizbeach, before the Chelev is the parts of the animal, when it's Kodesh, that goes on the Mizbeach. And since it can go on the Mizbeach, that's Heter Legabe Mizbeach. Once it becomes Notar, it was, went past the time period when you're allowed to put it on, then it becomes Asur Le Mizbeach. So just like it becomes Asur Le Mizbeach, that Isur now not only applies to the Mizbeach, but also applies to this individual eating the chelev that's already asur to him. It's asur b'achila, it's asur b'ana'a because of kodeshim. Now it'll also be asur because of notar, because of the fact that migo, that the item becomes asur the mizbeach now, it will also become asur b'achila to this individual. So that's another isur mosif over here. Now when the individual becomes tamei, Because until now, the individual could have eaten other pieces of Kodashim because he was Tahor. Now that he became Tameh, he cannot eat any other pieces of Kodashim. And that is an Iser Kolel. Because this individual is now a sur in more items than just this chalev that's notar, that's from the Mugdashim. He's also a sur in other chatichot of Kodesh. And Migo, that he becomes a sur in these other chatichot of Kodesh because he's tamei, betumat aguf. Therefore, he also becomes a sur in this chalev that is notar mina Mugdashim. And so now you get on there four isurim of achila through isur mosif and isur kolel. Now, we add on top of that it happens to be on Yom Kippur. Now, Yom HaKippurim is another Iser Kolel. Because until this point in time, an individual could eat Chulin. They were not restricted in Chulin, not because they're Tamei, not because of any other reasons that were here. The other reasons related to the Chalev in particular, that this was Chalev that was Notar Mina Mukdashim, and it was now Asur even beyond that because this individual was Tamei. But vis-a-vis Chulin, this individual could eat Chulin. Now Yom HaKippurim comes, he can't eat food of Chulin. So that's an Iser Kolel, because now for this individual, there are more things in the world that are Asur, and therefore, just like Migo, that Chulin is Asur B'Achila now, so too this Chalev, that is Notar Mina Mukdashim, also becomes Asur for him. And we add on the additional Iser of Yom HaKippurim. So that's how we build up the four Iserim that are mentioned by the Tanakhama, two of them through Iser Mosif, and two of them through Iser Kolel. The Chalev starts out being Asur. Then we add on top of that the problem of Hekdesh, which comes through Iser Mosif. That generates the Asham when you eat it, because then you're misappropriating Hekdesh. Then we added on top of that the fact that it was Notar. Notar is also an Iser Mosif, because that added on the Mizbeach as being Asur as well. And that's how we added on the problem of Notar. That brings you your second Chatat. Your first Chatat is for Chalev, second Chatat is for Notar. And your Asham was because of Hekdesh. Then on top of that, we add on the fact that this individual became Tameh. When they became Tameh, that's an Iser Kolel. And that adds on the dimension of the Iser of a person who is Tameh B'tumat HaGuf of eating Kodoshim. And that adds on your third Chatat. And then the fourth Chatat is generated by the fact that it's Yom HaKippurim, which is another Iser Kolel, because the individual is now Asur in not just this item or Kodesh, but in all Chulin. That Iser Kolel adds on the dimension of eating on Yom HaKippurim, which is the fourth Chatat that we're looking for, and that's how you get to four Chataot and one Asham. Then Rabbi Meir says, I can add on top of that, Hotza'ah on Shabbat. And how does that Iser of Shabbat get added on? So Rashi explains to us here, Alma Itle Iser Babat Achad, according to Rabbi Meir, Chayo Shekidesh Hayom, Chalu Alav Iser Achila, Yom HaKippurim, V'Iser Shabbat. At the moment that Shabbat and Yom HaKippurim start, they start simultaneously, and since the Iserim, they come Babat Achad, that adds on that last dimension we're looking for in the authorship of our Mishnah of Iser that comes with Vat Achat, and that's why the Iser of Hotza'av Shabbat falls simultaneously as the Iser of Yom HaKippurim. So Tosafot already starts to question that understanding of Rashi, because he asks the first question is, Vim Tomar, Ve'eche Choshi Rabbi Meir, Chiyuv Hotza'av, Bahadei Chiyuvei Da'achila. What does Hotza'av have anything to do with eating over here? So Tosafot's answer is because his swallowing creates the Hanacha for this object. So the Hotza'ah was created through the eating itself, and because you need, in order to be in violation of Hotza'ah, you need an Akirah. They're taking the item from its location, Hanacha, and placing it down somewhere else, from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaRabim to Rishut HaYachid. The swallowing, that can create a Hanacha, and therefore it's a part of the Isur of Hotza'ah, is the swallowing, because it generates one part of the Akirah, and then the Hanacha, the other half of the Isur Hotza'ah. Now, Tosafot over here says, but we don't we have a Mishnah in Shabbat that a person does Hotza'ah, either by elbow or in his mouth, which is a Derech Shinui, so therefore you're not Chayav, it's only Patur of Al-Asur, it's only Asur Midrabanan. He says that that's not the case over here, because with regards to items that you don't normally eat or put in your mouth, that's a Shinui. But food that normally goes in your mouth, that's not considered to be a Shinui vis-a-vis Hotza'ah, and that would be culpable midoraita for Hotza'ah on Shabbat. But then, the Re asks the very basic question, which is, Ma inyan zeh li isur chalal isur? What does this have to do with isur chalal isur? Because the isur over here that's coming bevat achat, Yom HaKippurim in Shabbat, would even work bezeh achar zeh. There's nothing about the addition of the Hotza'ah over here that requires it to be bevat achat, because the two are not mutually exclusive. nobody would say that if you're in violation of eating on Yom Kippur, that you can't be in violation of Otsa'ah on Shabbat. So then, what do they have to do with each other in terms of Isur Chalal Isur? Because of this question, Tosafot then says, V'amar Reb Yitzchok to Isur Bevadachad, Hainu Isur Otsa'ah de Shabbat, Isur Otsa'ah de Yom HaKippurim. That Yom HaKippurim that's mentioned over here is not Achila on Yom HaKippurim, but rather carrying on Yom HaKippurim. And therefore, carrying on Yom HaKippurim and carrying on Shabbat, that is the same Isur. And the only way that those could be Chal, if it happened Batachat, simultaneously, and that's how the Re explains this Gemara, that Yom Kippur and Shabbat here are both about carrying. He disagrees with Rashi that Eini Ruv Otsa'ah Yom HaKippurim, that there's no problem of carrying on Yom HaKippurim. Even on Yom Kippur, there's a problem of carrying, and that carrying of Yom Kippur and Shabbat are the Isurim that come Bevat Achat, that happen simultaneously because they're the same Isur. And that's the only way that they could be Chal, is if they came simultaneously, because one after the other, then you would have a problem, Vein Isur Chal Al Isur. There is one other version of how we get to the Bat Achat over here. Rashi and the Tosafot are very similar. It's the Yom Kippurim and Shabbat. It's a question of which Isurim and Yom Kippur and Shabbat that happened. The Rabbeinu Hananel, on the other hand, says that the Isur Bevat Achat over here is a case where the individual is Tamei, and then Hevi Shtei Se'arot, and then they became an adult. Because then the Isur Chelev and the Isur Tuma happened simultaneously, because when he became an adult, you have the problem of Chelev, and you have the problem of Tuma that devolve upon the individual simultaneously. The problem with the Rabbeinu Hananel's Pshat is that means that even the Tanakhama holds Bevat Achat. If that's the case, then why is the Gemara saying it's Rabbi Meir and not the Tanakhama of Rabbi Meir? Might be because, again, Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, and they rather have attribution to someone who has a name like Rabbi Meir than just say the Tanakhama of Rabbi Meir. In addition, it might be problematic because it has to do with the nature of what does it mean once you have Vishtei Sarot, that Tumas Chal at that point in time. Ramban on yesterday's Daf actually mentions that he thinks that anything that requires a Maser for something to happen, we do not automatically say that once a person becomes an adult, it's an Isur. Chelev, Nevela, those are Isurim that exist. When the person becomes an adult, even if the bird is yet to be a Nevela, even if the Chelev is not there, the Isur is there already on that individual, because nothing has to happen for that to become a Sur. On the other hand, with regards to Tumah, or Eshet Ish, the individual has to become Tamei, or the other individual has to get married for that to change the dynamic. And therefore, if they were Tamei beforehand, and then Hevish Shtei Sarot, then you could say it happens simultaneously. But if the Tumah happens afterwards, then you cannot say that Hevish Shtei Sarot, that he became Asur in Tumah. So therefore, you would have to explain the case here of the Tumah being prior to him becoming an adult, as we explained earlier, and not after he became an adult. And the Hevish Shtei Sarot is what generates that Isur. So now we found the author of our Mishnah, someone who has all of these dispensations with regards to Ein Isur Chal Isur, Isur Mosif, Isur Kolel, Bat Achat, and Rabbi Meir will be the author of our Mishnah. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute, Rabbi Meir, Aliba Daman. Rabbi Meir, according to whose opinion is he following over here? Rabbi Meir is a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva is a Talmid of Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanos and Rabbi Yoshua. So these are his grand Rebbeim. But the Gemara says, who does he hold like in his grand rebbeim, the rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva, in terms of this din? Which is, Aliba Daman, Ialiba de Rabbi Yoshua, if it's according to Rabbi Yoshua Damar, Tab Dvar Mitzvah Patur, if a person makes a mistake while they're in the performance of a mitzvah, they're considered to be Patur. They were trying to do a mitzvah, they failed for whatever reason in doing the mitzvah, but their intentions were the right intentions, then they are Patur. The example that's given in the Gemara in Shabbat is a case of Milah. An individual has two babies to give a Milah to. One of them is supposed to get a Milah on Shabbat, and one is supposed to get a Milah on Sunday. By accident, the individual went ahead and gave the baby who's supposed to get the Milah on Sunday, gave the Milah on Shabbat. That's a Toeh B'Dvar Mitzvah. He was trying to do a Mitzvah. He was trying to do Milah. There was a baby that needed a Milah that day. He just did the wrong baby. So there he's going to be Patur, even though he shouldn't have done it, but it's Patur because he was Toeh B'Dvar Mitzvah. So if that's the case, in our scenario in the Mishnah over here, the Mishnah says that they were getting married, and then they got mixed up. Isn't that a case of Toeh B'Dvar Mitzvah? That's interesting. It's a side discussion, and we can discuss it more in detail when we reach the Gemara in Kiddushin, but what mitzvah exactly they are accomplishing over here? It's a machloket rishonim as to whether in Kiddushin or Nisuin there is a mitzvah, or the mitzvah here is really pru or vu, And this is just the Hechitimsa to get to the mitzvah Peror Urvu. But the fact is that the Gemara here does call it a mitzvah, which is interesting in of itself. So now let's assume that the Mishnah is talking about a case of mitzvah, then he'd be patur. So then how does that help us in the Mishnah? Ella, I'll leave it to Rabbi Eliezer. What you have to say is it's according to Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that a tal b'dvar mitzvah is chayav. So Rabbi Meir, being the author of the Mishnah, can only say that within the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. We can have our Mishnah follow the position of Rabbi Yeshua and as a tal b'dvar mitzvah. Kikamar Rabbi Yeshua tal b'dvar mitzvah patur. When does Rabbi Yeshua say that when a person makes a mistake with a dvar mitzvah, he's patur? Hanimile gabi tinokot, dizmano bahul. That's only when he's under time pressure. When he's under time pressure, we say that the pressure of the time caused him to err, and that error was in the auspices or the framework of a mitzvah, and that's why he's patur. Over here, he has to get the milah done on that eighth day, on Shabbat, and he was under pressure for time, and he made the mistake. And that's why it's called a tal dvar mitzvah. Over here, with regards to marriage, there's no compelling reason why they have to get married today versus tomorrow. That's something that they chose to do. So there's no time factor or time pressure here that we would call it a tal b'dvar mitzvah. Of a high, kevin dein zmano baho. Over here, by the case of marriage in the Mishnah, there's no time pressure. Lo, he wouldn't say tal b'dvar mitzvah is patur. Vahare truma dein zmano baho. Wait a minute. In the case of truma, where there is no time constraint, v'kapatar, and we find that Rabbi Yeshua says that tal b'dvar mitzvah is patur. That's none. We have a Mishnah, yochel b'truma. He was eating truma, which is a mitzvah, assuming that it's avodah, assuming that he's doing something that is constructive. And then he finds out that he is a kohen that is not kasher, he's a kohen chalal, because his mother was a grusha or a chalutza, and then married his father a kohen. So he's a kohen pasul, and he's not entitled to eat truma. Rabbi Eliezer mechayev keren v'chomesh. Rabbi Eliezer says he's like a regular Israel. A regular Israel who eats truma has not only a problem of eating truma, but he also has to compensate and pay back 1 1/5 of the value of the truma that he consumed back to the Kohanim. Rabbi Yoshua poter, and Rabbi Yoshua says he's patur. Same machloket, tal b'dvar mitzvah. Here he's an osik b'mitzvah, and he's toeh b'dvar mitzvah. So since he's toeh b'dvar mitzvah, then we consider him to be patur according to Rabbi Yoshua. Over here, there's no time constraint. He's eating truma, which might be a mitzvah to eat truma. Maybe it's considered a bodah, but there's no time constraint over here. It says, "Ha'itmar Allah." On that, we have a qualification. Amar Bibi Barabai Hocha b'truma b'erev Pesach askinan. We're dealing with truma on erev Pesach, where there is a clock ticking. This is chametz, and he's got to finish it up before the zman of chametz on erev Pesach. The zman abahul. Now he's under a time pressure. So since he's under time pressure, also over there, the reason it talks about dvar mitzvah is patur according to Rabbi Yeshua. It's because of that time constraint. In our Mishnah, there's no time constraint. Even Rabbi Yeshua would agree this is not classified as tal b'dvar mitzvah. And therefore, Rabbi Meir could be the author of the Mishnah, either according to Rabbi Eliezer or according to Rabbi Yeshua. V'ibayitema, and some say, b'isor bat achat valibo de Rabbi Shimon. Some say that maybe the authorship of the Mishnah doesn't have to be Rabbi Meir. The authorship of the Mishnah can even be Rabbi Shimon, but it's a case of bat achat. So even though we saw in Rabbi Shimon's opinion, in the last two dapim, that Rabbi Shimon first of all holds Ein Yisur Chal Yisur, certainly by Yisur Kolel, and even in most cases by Yisur Mosif as well, he will say that it's not overriding the Ein Yisur Chal Yisur, but nevertheless, Bat Achat, which is the strongest of the dispensations to overcome the problem of Ein Yisur Chal Yisur, that Rabbi Shimon does hold of. And our case in the Mishnah will be a case of Bat Achat. So we have one answer to the Mishnah that Rabbi Meir is the author of the Mishnah because he has Iser Kolo, Iser Mosif, Bat Achat, and that's how we get the Iserim in the Mishnah. One direction there was to say that's only according to Rabbi Eliezer, who says Tal b'dvar mitzvah is chayav, because here you're performing a mitzvah and you're still chayav. There was another direction there, which was even according to Rabbi Meir, it could be according to Rabbi Yeshua, because Tal b'dvar mitzvah only applies when there's a time constraint. In our Mishnah, there's no time constraint. That was one way in terms of attribution of our Mishnah. The next way that the Gemara is going is, no, the Mishnah could be authored even by Rabbi Shimon. And the reason that you have four chiyuvim here, even though there's a problem of Ein Yisur Chal Yisur, it's because it all happened bevat achat. It all happened simultaneously. How it happens simultaneously, that's what the Gemara wants to know now. Bishlam akulo mishkachalu deshavinu shaliach, bishavainu shliach. The easy way to make it that it's all simultaneous is if the two brothers appointed a shliach, an agent, to go and be Mekadesh, the two sisters on their behalf. Their two sisters appointed a single agent to receive Kiddushin on their behalf. So the two brothers have one agent going out on their behalf, and the two sisters have an agent going out on their behalf. The two agents meet. Pagash shliach b'shliach. They meet each other, and they hand over the Kiddushin. So at that moment, everything happens simultaneously, because since one shliach is representing both brothers, and one is representing both sisters, as soon as the Kiddushin is given over, they are all married simultaneously. That means that the Isser of Eshedach, the Isser of Achotisha, the Isser of Eshedish, all happen at the same moment. Ella, the problem is, Nidot, Hecha Mishkachadle. Wait, how do you get them to be Nidot? There's a fourth Isser in the Mishnah over here. How do you get Nidot Bevadachat? So Amarav Amram, Amarav. We have the Girsa that Rashi has, so we'll explain it according to Rashi. And then we'll talk about the alternative Girsa that was in Rabbeinu Hanano that Tosafot and Rabbeinu Tam seems to favor, which is Amarav Amram Amarav Bishofat Mitoch Yud Gimel Lachar Shlosha Sar Lechuyuve Inhu Mitoch Shneimasar Lachar Shneimasar Lechuyuve Inhi. That they were Nidot from the time that they were already Tanot, and that went from the time that they were minors until they became of age, they crossed over 12. And same for the boys, they were already Nidot that were flowing from the time, or they were problematic Nidot from the time that the boys were minors until they became of age. Now Rashi explains, how does this all happen? Rashi says, it was that the brothers were twins, and the sisters were twins. Not only were the brothers twins and the sisters twins, they were all born on the same day, 1 year apart. The brothers are born 1 year. A year later, on the exact same day, the two sisters are born. So twin boys born this year on that day. Twin girls born the next year on the same day that the twin boys were born. Then they get married. They get married through these agents. That makes them married all simultaneously. Twin brothers marrying twin sisters. What Rashi says is, well, at the point of marriage, then all the other Yisurim happen. What about Nida? Nida comes to effect as soon as they become of age. So what they did was, say they were born, the way Rashi gives the example was, they were born on Rosh Hashanah. So the twin boys are born on Rosh Hashanah. A year later, the twin girls are born on Rosh Hashanah. And then, right before they become of age, meaning a day before their bar mitzvah for the boys, and a day before the bat mitzvah for the girls, which is the same year, because their girls are 1 year younger than the boys, that day before, they appointed the shlichim, they appointed the agents to create the kiddushin for them, and they said it will take effect as soon as we become adults. So Rashi says that they perform the kiddushin through the shlichim on the day before Rosh Hashanah, but they only become adults on Rosh Hashanah itself. So once they come on Rosh Hashanah, the moment that Rosh Hashanah comes in, all these things happen simultaneously. They are married, and the Isser Nida comes at that moment, because these girls were having a flow of Nida from before, when they were minors, until all the way time till they were already of age. Truth is, they don't have to flow the whole time. Once they're a Nida, if they didn't go to the mikveh, they remain Nidot. So if they became a Nida prior, and they remain Nidot through the period of becoming of age, then all of these things happen simultaneously. That's the way Rashi explains it. Where discuss now what the problems are with Rashi Shita. The most major problem, and Tosafot raises it, is the problem that the children created the Kiddushin before they were adults. How is it that they have the fact that the Ma'aseh Kiddushin, the action of Kiddushin, happened the day before their bar mitzvah, the day before their bat mitzvah, but it'll only take effect when they become adults? So Rashi is saying, you're right, Kiddushin can only happen when you're adults. So the boys, at least for the boys' side, they can only once they become adults, and therefore, they had to wait until the day of their bar mitzvah for the Kiddushin to be chal. And that same moment, the Isser Nida is chal. But how did they generate the Ma'aseh Kiddushin? The action of Kiddushin was done through the agents the day before and just said it will take effect when we become adults. But the action they took the day before was when they were minors. Minors, when they act, have no actions. Their actions are not considered to be actions because they are minors. So how can they do the Ma'aseh Kiddushin while they were minors? And then have it be the Chaluta Kedushin, the taking effect of the Kedushin happens once they become of age. They can't do any Maaseh when they're a Katan. The Maaseh Katan is nothing. So that's one of the major criticisms of Rashi's explanation. There are those who try to defend it through saying maybe it's a Davar Shelo Bali Olam. The other problem with Rashi's explanation is that you have to have this crazy case. It's a crazy case where you have twins, and they're all born on the same day a year apart. That's like a wild scenario that you have, and then they get married. That wild scenario, it seems so far-fetched that that can't be what the Gemara is discussing. So there is an alternative Girsa in the Rabbeinu Hananel, which Tosafot at first rejects, and then the Rabbeinu Tam upholds that Girsa, and many of the Rishonim also follow this Girsa of the Rabbeinu Hananel, which is the girsa in the other Gemarot was Bishofat mitoch gimel de'achar gimel. They had a flow of nida from the time that they were before 3 years old until after 3 years old. This solves some of our problems over here, because let's assume that the boys are already of age. If they're of age, they can marry the women. Now, the women are ketanot. They're under the age of 3. How can you marry a woman? Well, the father has the right to marry off his daughter when she's a ketana. So they could generate here kiddushin midoraita with these women through their fathers. That's number one. Number two is these young girls, the Gemara tells us that before the age of 3, they're not ru'uyin the biyah. Only after the age of 3 are they ru'uyin the biyah. So therefore, the kiddushin will only take effect once they become of age. Age here means crossing over that 3-year-old line. At that same moment, also, girls only become nidot or have tumata nida once they have come of the age of 3. So therefore, simultaneously, when these girls age into becoming over the age of 3, at that moment, they will have the problem of nida, because they already had a sighting of nida prior to that point in time. The tuma and the tumata nida will remain with them because they are ru'uyin the bi'ah at that moment. And so nida only takes effect at that moment when they're ru'uyin the bi'ah. But so too, the kiddushin will also only take effect at that moment, because that's the first point in time when they are ru'uyin the bi'ah. So they all take effect once these girls go from being under the age of 3 to over the age of 3. Now that solves the problem as far as the boys are concerned, how they have all these serim chal together. For the girls to have all these serim chal together, they have to actually become of age after the age of 12. And that's what the Gemara says here. If they remain nidot from that period until the age of 12, they don't have to be flowing dam, they just have to not go to the mikveh. They don't go to the mikveh, they'll remain nidot till they become of age over the age of 12. And for them, the same thing. All these serim will come to fruition at the moment that they become adults. So that's the explanation that is based on the girsa of the Rabbeinu Hananel. But it solves this problem of it being a crazy case. Because over here, first of all, you don't need twins. You don't have to be born on the same day. You can simply have two brothers marrying two sisters. They just did it through the father. And it's a case where they became nidot before the age of 3. And that's what generated all these simultaneous isurim. Now, the difficulty in this pshat is that the Gemara here seems to say that the 13 and the 12, the way Rashi has the girsa, happen at the same time, that the boys and the girls reach the point of isur at the same time. The way that the Rach's girsa works is that the boys have the isur when they reach 13 and the girls 3, but then their isur doesn't kick up from themselves until they reach the age of 12. And so, therefore, the isurim are happening at different points in time, which doesn't seem so clear from the Gemara, at least the girsa that we have from Rashi, as well as why you need this age of 12 for the girls, which happens at much later time. The boys will become asur, therefore isurim, immediately, once the girls come over the age of 3, but the girls then won't have therefore isurim until much later. And we know that Rabbi Chiya says there were 16 chatot over here in the Mishnah, that would be over a large span of time. And that might be why Rashi didn't favor that girsa of the Rach, and therefore he had the girsa that we have in our Gemara, that's talking about where the boys were 13 and the girls were 12, they were twins born 1 year apart on the same day. Now, over here, Rashi talks about the fact that one is only bar or bat mitzvah at 13 years in one day, or 12 years in one day. Some people claim that Rashi believes that you have to wait an extra day afterwards, and not on your birthday do you become an adult. I don't see that in the Rashi. Rashi seems to be saying that you have to wait 13 years, one day, the next day is the day of your birthday. And that is because when a person reaches their first birthday, the birthday is actually the start of their second year. The person's first year of life is from the time they're born until they complete that entire year. That's 365 days later. 365 days later is a day before their birthday. Their birthday is a day into the next year. And therefore, when you say you need 13 years and one day for them to be bar mitzvah, or 12 years and one day for them to be bar mitzvah, that does not mean the day after their birthday. It means the day of their birthday, and that's why we pass in the halacha that a bar and bat mitzvah take place on the person's birthday. We do not wait mi'eit le'eit, that the Gemara discusses in other places. We do not wait to the exact moment when they were born on that birthday. We wait 13 years in one day and 12 years in one day, but that's on the day of their birthday. Because your birthday is always the first day of the next year, it is not the last day of the previous year. Right now the Gemara says, mafrishinotan. We separate the women. If they possibly could have become impregnated here, we separate them to make sure that there was no pregnancy, and then we allow them to go back to their husbands. Gemara says, "Vayni shami taber de bi'ah rishona." Gemara says that a woman does not become pregnant from her first intercourse. So over here, they were getting married. It was the first time they were together with these in anybody, any man, and therefore they shouldn't have become impregnated. So why are we holding them over? So I'm Rav Nachman, number of Arbavua, Shibalu Vishanu. It was a case here where they had one biyah, and then they had a second biyah. So they actually had two biyot over here. So there's possibilities that they became pregnant from the second biyah. Ve'alaha detanyo, Rabbi Chiya harikan tet zayin chatot. Wait, what are you going to do with the fact that Rabbi Chiya said here that there's 16 chatot over here? Tlatin utartin avin. There's actually 32 chatot over here. Because this is according to Rabbi Eliezer. It's machloket Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim as to whether shte biyot, two intercourse, actions of intercourse in one halam, in one forgetting, is that one chatat or two chatot? The Chachamim say it's one forgetting, that's one chatat. Rabbi Eliezer believes that it's two chatot. Each biyah is a separate chatat. And we just saw before, we set up the Gemara that Rabbi Eliezer is the author of the Mishnah. It's Rabbi Meir Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer. So if that's the case, you should have come out with 32 chatot, not 16 chatot. Mar says, Utameich. If you really think we're holding like Rabbi Eliezer, de Mechayev Akol Koach Vekoach Tuva Avyon. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it's each hana'ah, or action of hana'ah, that obligates one in a chatat. That means that not just every biyah, every full intercourse makes you chayv in chatat, but every time that the person moves and gets hana'ah from the biyah, that will generate a need for a chatat. So that means that you need many, many chatot. Ella, what are you going to have to say? De Bekoach Rishon Kochoshiv. They're only calculating based on the first penetration, which that first moment of hana'ah, that's 16. Hakanami to be a rishona kochashiv. So too over here, they're just counting the first biyah, according to those that say it would be a full biyah. And therefore, it's giving you 16 of Rabbi Chiya, even though there might be 32, because the Mishnah is talking about pregnancy, which can only happen if they had multiple biyot over here. Now, that's the girsa that we have in our Gemara. The Gemara drops the girsa entirely from the Gemara. And that is because what Tosafot says over here. Be'isur b'bat achat v'libid Rabbi Shimon, v'atishapir afiluk Rabbi Yoshua. Now, before we already explained the Gemara in Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, which is that even if we hold that a person is involved in a mitzvah, b'dvar mitzvah's potor, we still found a way to fit into Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. But certainly, if you say that it's a case of b'bat achat, alibad Rabbi Shimon, then it can for sure go according to Rabbi Yeshua, because Rabbi Shimon itlei b'perek ha'ol dvarim, to Rabbi Yeshua ta'ab b'dvar mitzvah, lo asa mitzvah chayav. That he believes that in the Gemara there, that when we say toi b'dvar mitzvah, that doesn't mean toi b'dvar mitzvah and didn't do a mitzvah. It's toi b'dvar mitzvah and you ended up doing the mitzvah, just the wrong mitzvah. So in the case of toi b'dvar mitzvah and lo asa mitzvah legamrei, like the case here in our Mishnah, even Rabbi Yeshua would agree that that is problematic and you are culpable for it. Because of that, the Gemara takes out the gears of all the Gemara that we just read. Because the whole question of the Gemara here revolves around that position of Rabbi Eliezer, that there are multiple chatot for multiple biot. There are multiple chatot for multiple hana'ot. That's all according to the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. You're only forced to say that if you think the Mishnah has to be altered according to the position of Rabbi Eliezer. But the Gemara already came up with two other solutions that allows Rabbi Yeshua to be the author of the Mishnah. If that's the case, you don't have to have Rabbi Eliezer as the author of the Mishnah. Who says that it has to be that you have multiple chatot over here? It could be biyah, and then another biyah, two biyot, and that's why you have to worry about pregnancy. But there's only one chatat, the 16 chatot of Rabbi Chiya, four for each individual, for that one biyah, because it's Elam Echad, it was one forgetting, and it's author Rabbi Yeshua. For that reason, you see the little aleph here, the Gemara takes this little piece that we just discussed out of the Gemara. Now, Amalei Rovo the Rav Nachman, Veha Tamar bebiyah Rishona Yabro. Tamar became impregnated in her first intercourse with Yehuda. That's how she became impregnated with the twins. Now, Pashtut of the Psukim in the Torah, in Parshat Vayeshev, is that Tamar was already married to the sons of Yehuda, Er Ve'onan, and she was not a betula. So where they know the fact that Bibiyah Yishrona Yabra, and that she was still a betula, that seems to be some sort of misora that they had the Chachamim, because out of the Psukim it's not so clear. The Ibn Ezra talks about a possibility like this, and he declines and says it just doesn't fit into the Psukim. So the Chachamim must have had a misora that she was a betula. So Malay, Tamar, Be'etzba Macha. That's no proof from Tamar, because empirically we know that there's no way she could have become impregnated from that first biyah. So she used her finger, she created friction or pushed in with her finger, means she got rid of her betulim by herself, and by getting rid of the betulim by herself, that allowed her to become impregnated from the first biyah. Da'amar Rabbi Yitzchak, homo achot shel Beit Rabbi, there's also another girsa, Beit David, Tamar Shiman. They used to nickname these women either from Beit Rabbi or from Beit David, who wanted to become impregnated the first time. And so therefore they used to remove their betulim themselves in order that they could possibly become impregnated the first time. They used to nickname them Tamar. V'lama nikram Sheman Tamar. Why do they call Tamar? Shem Tamar Shemacha be'etzba'a. Because she was the one that we know B'Mesora did such a similar thing. V'ahavu er v'onan. What about her previous husbands? The two sons of Yehuda that were her previous husbands. Er v'onan shimshu shelo kedarkan. Er v'onan never had bia with her in a natural way. They only had bia with her in an unnatural way. Shelo kedarka. And therefore, her betulim were never taken out because neither of them had bia or intercourse with her in the normal way. So, meitav, is that really true? Kol esrim v'arba chodesh, dash mi bifnim, v'zereh mi bachutz, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, once a woman has given birth to a baby, and now she's allowed to have intercourse with her husband, but she's still nursing the baby, in that period of time, if she became impregnated, it would be very dangerous. So, what Rabbi Eliezer suggests that the person does is, dash mi bifnim, they have intercourse, but then they should not ejaculate in the woman, but outside of the woman, so they will not impregnate her at that time. So Amrulei, the Chachamim said to Rabbi Eliezer, Halalu Einu Elokim Maaseh Er V'Onan. That's a terrible thing to do. You can't do that. That's what Aaron V'Onan did. What they're suggesting over here is that the practice of Er V'Onan was Dash Mim Bifnim V'Zoreh B'Machutz. They should have intercourse, but they wouldn't finish the intercourse inside of Tamar. But that means that they had intercourse with her, and she was no longer a Ptula. So the Gemara amends it and says, no, k'maseh er v'onan, v'lo k'maseh er v'onan. It was similar to er v'onan, but not exactly alike. K'maseh er v'onan dichtei v'ayayim ba'al ish rachiv v'shichet arza. It's similar to the fact that Aaron Onan acted in a similar way, which was that they wasted their seed. They were not willing to impregnate Tamar. V'lo k'maseh er v'onan dilu hotam shlo k'darga. The way that they accomplished that was by having intercourse with her in an unnatural way. But over here, in the case of the discussion here in Rabbi Eliezer, it's kedarka. It's in a normal fashion. It's just that they're pulling out before they can impregnate the woman. So now you have dash mifnim zorebi bachutz, which is problematic. But that's not what Er V'Onan did. They did something similar, which is that they were unwilling to impregnate Tamar. So far they had bia shelo kedarka. Now the Gemara solves the problem. Er V'Onan had bia shelo kedarka in an unnatural manner. She was still a betula. And how could she become pregnant from Yehuda? That was the first intercourse that she had in a natural manner. The answer is because be'etzva ma'acha, that she took out her betulim herself, therefore she'd become impregnated the first time. And that's what leads us to this mesora that women who do that are given the nickname Tamar. Bishlam onan, bayonan, I understand why that was the case, dichtiv baby shichet arza. Because it describes to us what he did wrong, the shichet arza. Ella Er, Minolan. How do you know that Er did something wrong? Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Dichtiv Vayamet Gamuto. Says Vayareh Beinei Hashem Asher Asah. That which Onan did was terrible in the eyes of Hashem. Vayamet Gamuto. He also killed him. What do you mean he also killed him? So as the Gemara says, there's an attribution of the terrible act of Onan of Shechvat Zera Levatala and Shichet Arza that's associated with Onan is now also being attributed to Er because it says Vayamet Gamuto. Onan died the same way or for the same reason. And that Gam tells us that Er was doing the same thing. So Avu Botomi Tamet, he died for the same reason or for the same problem. So Mara says, Bishlam Onan, I understand Onan Mishum Lo Yeh Hazara. Onan explains, or the Torah explains, why Onan refused to have intercourse with Tamar and to impregnate her, because it says, V'yada Onan Ki Lo Yeh Hazara, the child born from this marriage, this levirate marriage from Yibum, would not be his child, it would go after his brother's name. Therefore, he was not willing to impregnate Tamar, because he didn't want to give the offspring to his brother. He wanted it to be his own offspring. We understand the rationale behind his position. Er, who was the first husband of Tamar, why was he keeping this practice? He didn't want to become pregnant and to ruin her beauty. If her becoming pregnant, he thought would ruin her beauty. Therefore, he had the same practice of only having intercourse with her, shelo kidarka. There are a number of interesting items over here. Number one is that Rashi, in Parshat Vayeshev, in discussing v'shichet arza, Rashi over there says that v'shichet arza is dash mifinim v'zoreh mibachutz. Rashi says, not like the Gemara over here, that it was a case of shelo kidarka, but rather a case like what is mentioned by the discussion of Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim, that it was a case that Er V'Onan acted dash mifinim v'zoreh mibachutz. That's one interesting thing. The second interesting thing is that the Rabbi Kiva Eger over here points out that in this week's Parsha, in Parsha Vayera, with regards to Benot Lot, over there also, Benot Lot become impregnated from the first Biah from their father. Rashi over there comments and says, how did they become impregnated from their father on the first time? They said, just like by Tamar, that Ma'acha be'etzba'ah, that they took out their betulim in order that they become impregnated from the first time. So Rashi makes that comment with regards to Benot Lot, that's how they acted. But with regards to Erev Onan, he says that their Evera was Dash mivivnim v'zorem mibachutz. Tosfot over here says, Mashmo de asur l'shamei shelo kedarka. From our Gemara over here, it sounds like one may not have intercourse in this manner with one's wife. It's asur. That's why Hashem got angry at Erev Onan. Tosfot then quotes the Gemara in Nidarim at the end of the second parak, which says that a man can interact with his wife or have intercourse with his wife in any way that he pleases. So how do we reconcile between the Gemara here and the Gemara over there? So Tosafot reconciles by saying that the Gemara over here is talking about a person who's intentionally being mashchit zera. Person is intentionally wasting the seed, does not want to impregnate his wife, and knows that he's doing this in order to waste the seed. In the case of the Gemara Nidarim, that is not a case where the person is intentionally wasting the seed. Might even be that his wife's pregnant already. But that the individual has a desire to interact with his wife in this way. I'm going to read either the Hotam Mayri Velohat Sad Zera Shari, that there he doesn't finish off the Biyah, so there's no Shikvat Zera Levatala. But Oda Mari, Lochoshiv Gmaser Vonan Elokimit Kaven Lashchit Zera. Oh, he intentionally wants to waste the seed. For Ragil Lasod Kain Tamid, and he does it all the time. Alvabek Rai, if he does it on an occasion or a rare occasion, Baalma, Mitavel of Olishto, Shlokadarka, has some desire to interact with his wife in this manner, then that's okay, because that's not the actions of Erev Onan. Erev Onan were intentional actions that they did over and over and over again because of the specific reason they didn't want to impregnate their wife. So on a one-off basis, the Ri says that which is said in the Gemara in the Dream is true, that a person can interact with his wife in any way he wants. But on a regular basis, our Gemara over here says that that's problematic. When we get to the loch already, the Rambam says it's only permitted when there is no shikvat zera levatala. And the Beit Yosef brings in that the loch is, and we're very makpid based on the Gemarot and Nida, that shikvat zera levatala is a terrible, terrible avira. And therefore we do not permit any of these interactions with one's wife because of the problem of shikvat zera levatala. And that's really overlaid by the Kabbalists and the Gemara Nida, which talk about the severity and the terrible things that come about from Shikvat Zera Levatala, and because of that, the halacha is brought down that one may not interact their wife except with the proper manner of Biyah intercourse, where there is no Shikvat Zera Levatala. Now, Tana Rabbanan Ota, the pasuk in the end of Mitzorah, when it talks about Tuma and Tara, over there, the pasuk in Vayikra tells us, Bisha asher yishkav ish ota Shikvat Zera, v'rachatzu b'mayim v'tamu ad arev. Anytime that a man and woman have intercourse, they are tamei tumat yom, and they have to go to the mikveh in order to become tehorim. Now, this is definitely gzeret hakatuv, because as far as the shikvat zera is concerned, which we know shikvat zera itself is tamei, that shikvat zera is deposited inside the woman, which is called maga beta starim. It's a contact in a place that is not exposed to the outside. And since that's the case, the touching of the shikvat zera is not a reason for one to become Tamei. So the woman really should not become Tamei here, or Tamei'ah here, until she's polected Shikvat Zera. Until the Shikvat Zera is emitted or secreted from her body or exits her body, that's when she would become Tamei'ah, because then she would be coming into contact with the Shikvat Zera that's leaving her body. Nevertheless, there's a Gzeret HaKatuv that after Bi'ah, that they are considered to be Tamei'im. But not because of the regular rules of Tumat Tara, Gzeret HaKatuv. In that Gzerat HaKutuv, it says, Isha Sheishkav Isha Ota. Ota is a miyut. So Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, Ota, Prat Lekala. That comes to exclude the case of a Kala. The Kala, in her first intercourse, will not have to go to the mikveh. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. V'chachamim omrim, Prat Shelo Kedarka. No, the case where she doesn't have to go to the mikveh is in a case where they had Biyah in an unnatural way. So Amalei Hon, Brei Rav Nachman, the Rav Nachman. So Hon, the son of Rav Nachman, says Rav Nachman, Lema, Kasava Rabbi Yehuda, Torah Chasal Tachshite Kala. Let us say that according to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion here, the reason the Kala doesn't have to go to the mikveh is because the Torah didn't want the Kala to have to ruin her makeup. That's what Tosfot says. Delo Yipo Srak Mialpana. She got all made up and she took care of herself for the wedding. So we don't have to go to the mikveh and have it all get washed off. So therefore the Torah says that she doesn't have to go to the mikveh when she is a Kala. Even though, as Tosfos points out, once she gets up, or once she is paletet shechvat zera, she's going to have to go to the mikveh anyway. Nevertheless, either she can remain laying down, or she can put in some sort of barrier that won't allow the shechvat zera to exit her body. And by doing that, she will not become tamei, won't have to go to the mikveh right away. Amalei, his father, Rav Nachman, said back to him, no, lefi she'eini isha mitaberet mebi'arishona. That the reason is because the woman cannot become impregnated from the first intercourse. Rashi says over here, v'lo shechvat zera karinin bei. Deinra uilazria, because it's not good enough to be mazria. Now again, this is gzerata katuf, because as far as the location, it's a makom that is mazria, and the zera itself is good enough to be mazria. But the gzerata katuf is because this will not result in a pregnancy, therefore there is no tuma over here. It's a gzerata katuf, and it's not because the Torah was chasa ala kala. Now the Gemara says, v'maika miflegei, what is the argument here between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim? Rabbanan Savrei Shechvat Zera, the Pasuk says Shechvat Zera. Shechvat Zera means something that can produce an offspring. Prat, Lahara'a. That comes to exclude a case where the person doesn't have full intercourse, they only have a certain amount of penetration. The woman, which we'll get to later in the Masechta, what exactly Hara is. But then, Ota, the Miut of Ota comes, Prat, Lashalokadarka, comes to exclude a case where they get Bia bit unnatural ways, because that's not Shechvat Zera. That's not semen that's going to produce an offspring, because it's being deposited somewhere where it cannot impregnate the woman. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Shloka Darka, Vehara, Mishechvat Zera Napka. They're both excluded from Shechvat Zera. The problem of Shloka Darka and the problem of Hara are the same problem. Hara does not end up with a Gemar Bia, doesn't end up with the depositing of the Shechvat Zera in the woman, and just a penetration of the woman. That's why there's no Tuma over there, because there's no Shechvat Zera. She's not becoming impregnated. And so too, the problem with Shaloki Darka is that there's no Shechvat Zera over there. Therefore, I have Ota left over, and Ota is Prat LeKala. Comes to exclude the case of Kala, where she won't have to go to the mikveh from her first Bia. Based on what Rav Nachman said, the Gzera Tokatuv is because she cannot become impregnated from that Bia. Kiata Ravin, Am Rab Yochanan. Kol Shishata Achar Bala Esushanim, V'niseit. Any woman, after either she was divorced or widowed from her husband and waits 10 years before she gets married, Shuv Eina Yoledet. She does not give birth again. Amrav Nachman, no shanuel, shein datoli nasei. In datali nasei. That's only true if the woman does not intend to get remarried. But if she intends to get remarried, then that keeps things alive, and she can become impregnated at that point. Aval datali nasei mitaberet. If she had in mind to get married, she can become impregnated even after that period of time. So Amalei Rova, the Bat Rav Chista. So Rova says to Bat Rav Chista, Rova was married to the daughter of Rav Chista. There are rumors or murmurings about you from the Rabbanan, because she had been previously married to Rami Bar Chama, and then she waited for Rava's wife to pass away, and then they both had their second marriage together. But in waiting for Rava's wife to pass away, she had to wait 10 years or more. And so therefore, Rava is worried about the fact that now that she's waited for 10 years, she won't become impregnated from their marriage. So Amarlei, Ana Datai Alach, Chavai. I had you in mind, I had my eye on you for a long time, and therefore, there's no problem here, because I intended to become pregnant. That's based on a Gemara that talks about that she had some sort of nevuah, or sense that she was going to be married to Rova later on, and therefore she waited for his wife to pass away, and then she married him. Hayid ata the kamedir of Yosef, a woman came before Rav Yosef, Amrulo, Rebbe, ana shaiti achar bali esushanim, v'yalati. I didn't get married for a second time until more than 10 years after my first husband, and I still gave birth. So what the Chachamim are saying is not true. Amalei Biti, Al Tutsio Laza Divrei Chachamim. Yosef says, the Chachamim's statement is empirical. It has to be true. There's no way that it could have happened this way. So Amalei, so after pressuring her, she says to him, L'nachri Nivalti. You're right. I had intercourse with a non-Jew or with a third party. Meaning that in that interim period, she had intercourse while waiting for this second marriage. So it really wasn't 10 years. It was split up because she had had intercourse in the interim. Amar Shmuel. Ukulan srichot amtin shlosha chodoshim. All these women, like the women in our Mishnah, have to wait 3 months. No matter who they are, these women, they have to wait 3 months to check if they're pregnant. With the exception, chutz migioret umushukhrerek tana. If they are a youngster, meaning they are minors that converted, or they're minors who were shvachot, who were freed. So both of them come through a conversion process while they're minors, and therefore we don't worry about the fact that they are impregnated. Aval Ktana Bat Yisrael, but if a minor Bat Yisrael gets into one of these problems, then Srikha Lamtim Gimel Chodoshim. She does have to wait 3 months because there we're worried that the Ktana will get mixed up with the Gdola. And so because of the Gdola, we also make the Ktana wait. Ubimai, how exactly did she get separated from her husband? Ibimiyun, if it was done through her annulling the marriage, then Vamar Shmuel. Shmuel says, the low boy, you don't have to wait the 3 months. Because if she is young enough to annul the marriage, that also means that she's young enough that she cannot become impregnated, and you don't have to wait out the 3 months. Vibiget, if she's getting divorced through a get, Hamra Shmuel Chada Zimra. Then Shmuel already told us that she has to wait the 3 months when she gets a get, because then you'll get confused with the Gedolah. Damar Shmuel, Miana Bo, Ina Tzricha Lamtim Shloshah Chodeshim. If she annulled the marriage through Miyun, then she doesn't have to wait 3 months before she marries again. Natan La Get, if the husband gave her a get, then Tzricha Lamtim Shloshah Chodeshim. Then she has to wait the 3 months, because then she looks exactly like a Gedolah. She's getting a get, and she'd have to wait 3, because we don't want you to get mixed up. Ella, it has to be a case, Biznut. This is a case of Znut, because Rubanan Katana Mishum Gedolah. The case here in our Mishnah is a case of znut. Here, it's accidental, but there was znut that was carried on over here. And therefore, the Chachamim were gozer by Ktana, that just like a Gdola, in the case of znut, we'll have to wait 3 months. So too by the Ktana, she will also have to wait 3 months. As Rashi says over here, Vagabi Gioret Ktana lo gazur mishum delo shchicha. And by Gioret and Mishuchreret, even though they were Ktanot, and we are Choshesh in general, the fact that a Nachrit or a Shivcha or Mizaneh, there we don't worry about it because they are Ktanot. And the only reason that we worry about a Shivcha or a Gioret once they become older and convert, because we would assume that they would have withheld themselves from having intercourse because they want to convert, so therefore we shouldn't have to worry, they should better get married immediately after they come into the fold. It's only because Gzeira Otu Egdola, a Jewish woman who had possibly performed Znut, you have to wait 3 months. So then if you made that Ektana, who was a Nachrit in converting, or a Shivcha and was converting, had to wait 3 months, then it would become a Gzeira to the Gzeira. Because Ktana Bat Yisrael is only a Gzeira because of Gdola, and a Gdola that's converting or being Mishuchreret is also only a Gzeira atu Gdola. So Ktana by the Nachrit and the Shivcha, that would be a Gzeira to the Gzeira, and that's why they didn't put it in place, especially because it wasn't Shchiach. Mar says, Umi Gazrina Ktana Mishum Gdola, since when are we Gozer Ktana because of a Gdola? Vatnan. Mayuk Tanot, our Mishnah says, if they were Ktanot, if they were minors, Shein and Ruyot Leleid, Maksirino Tamiyad, they can go back right away. We don't wait then in that case. So he says, no, that was an unusual case over here. This is like a once-in-a-lifetime type of case. Where it says, Michmal de Havai? What, you're suggesting that what the Mishnah says here was a real case? Ela ki horat shah haita. It's a very important statement of the Gemara. The Gemara says, whatever the Mishnah said never really took place. It was ki horat shah. That was such an unusual, crazy case that the Chachamim are not going to be gozer in such a crazy case, or to another case like it, because it will never happen again. So, v'chiluf lo shchiach, because this getting mixed up with the wives, with two brothers and two sisters, is not common, and therefore we would not be gozer up to that case. Now, what's important here is the Gemara says the case in the Mishnah never happened. And Rashi says they know that from the fact that it says, shnaim shikichu, two people who had kiddushin, as if it's telling a halachic case, but not telling you about a practical situation that took place. And why this is important is that many times in the Mishnah, many times in the Gemara, they have these far-fetched cases that take place. Those cases are not a reflection of the normal behavior or the social norms of the time. Those cases are not examples of condoned behavior or things that were going on. Rather, what the Chachamim are doing, both in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, is that they're testing the limits of the halacha. The only way to test the limits of the halacha is to create these extreme cases. But these extreme cases aren't cases that happened. These are extreme cases that they make up in order to test the boundaries of the halacha to see how far we can push it or where the limits of the halacha are. And that's what the Gemara said here. There's no way that that case took place. That's just a case that was made up in order to look at the halacha or to investigate the halacha. And that's what the Gemara says. Ki horat shah. That case, we wouldn't make gzeira out of that case because it's such a far-fetched case. We know in general the gzeirot chachamim are only for common cases, not for things that are lo shchiach. Okay, we're going to stop over here, 6 lines down on the top of Lamed Hey Amud Aleph by Lishna Achrina, where the Gemara is going to come and have a different lashon in Shmuel's statement about which women need to wait and don't need to wait.